It's time for Firearm Friday, a podcast dedicated to bringing together the firearm industry and community. Now here's your host, from the great state of Texas, the tactical leprechaun himself, Chris Dover.
TGIF crew, and welcome to the show. I am Chris Dover, and today we're going to be talking with Mike Messenger from Harper's Ferry Armory about some of the awesome custom products that they offer, from revolvers to 1911s to some very nice AR-15 platform rifles. But first, let's take a second to talk about WMD Guns. Now, you may have heard about WMD because of their innovation in the firearms coatings sector, but they also produce some very high quality firearms and parts as well. So be sure to go over and check out what they may have to offer. That's over at WMD Guns. Again, that's WMDGuns.com. All right, we've got Mike in the house from Harper's Ferry Armory. How are you, Mike?
Hey, how's it going?
Doing well, trying to fight off what apparently is the SHOT Show plague. Unfortunately,
I am with you. Yeah, I guess you get all those people in one spot, it doesn't end well there as far as being sick.
Well, I know that seems to be the nomenclature for that. I'm not convinced that's what has happened. We drove in, so we drove straight through to Vegas from Texas and then straight back to Texas, 20 plus hours each way, kind of swapping out driving and that sort of thing. And part of my tactic was to stop every now and then to have a quick smoke and grab some coffee or whatever, and a lot of times I would stand outside, and it was freezing temperatures.
And cold in Texas?
On the way.
Of course, it's like -9 here today, so I don't feel bad.
Yeah, no, we didn't run into any type of weather like that. When I say freezing, I mean right at the 32-degree mark.
But, I got you.
But I think standing out in that, and getting cold, it certainly woke me up, but then I got in the vehicle and got warm again. And I think that repetitive nature of getting cold, getting warm, getting cold, getting warm the whole way home.
I got you.
I think more than anything, it's just giving me a really bad cold. But glad to hear that you guys made it home okay. So no trouble with airlines or stuff, I guess.
No. Coming here, I mean, going out the SHOT Show, the lines were a little long because, the government shutdown is affecting some of the TSA, well, I guess all of the TSA agents. But they made the announcement the day we left that they were going to end that temporarily, and it seemed like all the TSA agents were there. So we ended up getting there a little too early, but got to enjoy some more of the Vegas food and enjoyed ourselves for a little while for the red eye. We had a red eye home and got home and, of course, slept for quite some time because it looks like my iWatch says I walked 36 miles while I was out
there. Wow. That's interesting. Yeah, I know there was quite a few horror stories coming out of SHOT Show about air travel this year. So,
The booth right behind us couldn't get there because their light got all messed up because of that. And unfortunately, that generally means you don't get invited back. So that's not fun for them. But made it.
Maybe hopefully with the government shutdown and stuff like that, hopefully the NSF realizes that that was an extenuating circumstance.
Sure, I hope so too.
Obviously, that's hope. We don't want anybody to get kicked out of the show. So, you guys were in the next facility there, which is the little kiosks on the third floor outside of the media room. Is this y'all's first year for being there?
It was our first year. Of course, there as a vendor, an exhibitor, whatever you want to call it. We go there, actually, that's my third year personally, but the owner, Nick, and investors and stuff like that, they've been there, I'd say at least the past 5 years there as purchasers and stuff like that. We've been manufacturing since then, but this is the first year where we were like, let's get it together and let's get out there and see what we can do. So, yeah, our first year there as an exhibitor.
Right. Awesome. Now, I've never had anybody own, not to my recollection anyway, from those next, I call them kiosks. I don't know exactly what the proper terminology is, but how did that work out for you? Did y'all enjoy that, or wish that it was actually in a booth setting, or what are your thoughts on that?
honestly, I really liked it. I thought, you know, the limited space would be one of the negative aspects of it, but it was kind of nice because, you know, it made it to where there was only four of us: owner, one of the investors, myself, who helps run the company, and actually my wife, who works here part time. We got to kind of alternate because you didn't really need a ton of staff that you would need for, like, you know, a Sig Sauer booth or something like that, because they're huge. So we were able to rotate, which was nice, because I'll tell you what, that's a long week.
Yeah, it definitely is. So y'all got some time. Y'all got to spend some time on the floor as well, I'm guessing, looking at all the
actually,
eyeballing all the other goodies. Right.
Yep.
Yeah. Very cool. Now, shifting gears a little bit, let's get a little bit of history, if you don't mind, as far as your background and how did the whole Harper's Ferry Armory get started?
So me personally, my background was kind of with guns, but not really. I was pretty much in the Army most of my adult life. I was an infantryman. Got deployed a couple times. When I got home, since I went pretty much straight out of high school, you know, I had 1 year gap there where I couldn't figure out what to do. You know, right out of high school, went there and got home, and I was like, you know, what am I going to do? Yeah, so I couldn't figure it out. Had a couple, you know, decent jobs or whatever, but was bored. So I'm like, you know what, I'm going to go back to school. So I went back to school, and here at Harper's Ferry Armory, we actually have a retail shop as well, right in Ranson, West Virginia. And walked in here to buy a gun on accident because I thought it was, like, something we could bring the kids to. You know, we get that kind of mistake quite often. I thought it was, like, a museum or something, but it was a gun shop. So I came in, and I'm like, oh, well, this is even better. So I walked in and probably bought about 10 guns that first month. And I remember Nick, you know, back before I knew him, he joked and said, you should just work here. And I was like, oh, you know what? Well, I'm in college now because I'm bored and I don't know what to do with myself. I can do it, you know, 1 or 2 days a week. And that eventually graduated, and I got out of school. That had graduated up, and I got out of school and was working here full time, you know, just as one of the everyday guys. And one day Nick said, hey, do you wanna run it? And I said, okay, sounds good to me. I'll give it a shot. And I guess we're almost 5 years later, and Things are going good.
Very nice. Now, has Harper Ferry always done the manufacturing end or whatever on the, or customizations on the firearms?
So yeah, so a little bit about, you know, Harper's Ferry Armor. I mean, you know, beyond me, Nicholas Petty, the owner, president of the company, I mean, he decided, he's a local businessman. He decided, you know, I really like guns, and he's a pretty big history buff with the emphasis on the Civil War. He said, you know, I guess I'm going to open a gun shop or, you know, open gun manufacturing, and I'm going to call it Harper's Ferry Armory because here where we live, we're technically in Ranson. You got three major, I wouldn't say major, we have three towns, Ranson, Charlestown, and Harper's Ferry. So he decided, you know, we're going to go to Ranson. Ranson was really nice to us and good business-friendly area for us to do business in. And so 7 miles from the original Harper's Ferry Armory, which wasn't called Harper's Ferry Armory, it was just the second domestic arsenal and armory in the United States, which, of course, was nominated by George Washington. So we're going to open it right there. We're going to give the brand a revive and you know, go from there. And so, yeah, that's where the Charlestown comes from, by the way. That's Charles Washington. So there's tons of history in our town. Civil War, of course, the raid on the original armory by John Brown, so it was a big time history thing and a revive of the brand name. We got into the manufacturing pretty much right off. We started extremely slow as far as, you know, how much we could do or what we were capable of, and the retail shop sits about 500 feet from the manufacturing buildings out back, and it's been a fun ride ever since.
Yeah. Now I know with definitely I think it was a smooth marketing move with the Harper's Ferry, because there was two things that and I passed your kiosk multiple times during the week, but like you said, everybody I think was so busy that show. It was pretty amazing, I think, the things that people were accomplishing. on the dealer side, on the booth side, the vendor side, the media side, and just everybody was having a good time and getting those deals done. But I walked by, and there wasn't as much traffic. It was on the last day. I believe it was on the last day anyway. Maybe the next to the last day. I can't remember. Days have run together at this point. But I walked by actually going to the restroom, and there was a slick little revolver sitting on your table that caught my attention first. I'm somewhat, I guess, of a wheel gun guy, and that caught my attention first. And then, of course, my eyes, you know, gravitated to the sign just to kind of check that out. And when I seen Harper's Ferry, I was like, okay, I'm going to have to stop back by there because my curiosity is now piqued. what's going on here? So I think that, I think that was a pretty sweet move. Now on the, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, yeah, nationally, it's actually great. I love the way it's branded personally. A lot of people feel the same exact way. They think it was really nice, and it has a good nostalgic feel to it. But locally, we have a little confusion because our retail store is in Ransom, and which, like I said, about 6 or 7 miles away. And they're like, "Well, do you have another location in Harper's Ferry, or you get a lot of phone calls?" I'm in Harper's Ferry, and I can't find you guys.
Right, I can see the confusion. That could be. Well, maybe maybe franchise out eventually. Maybe.
Hey, maybe one day I'm down.
Open that new store. You never know. Now on the. I do want to get into the products a little bit, at least in a general sense here starting out, talking about the manufacturing, particularly with the revolvers and the 1911s, is there a lot of hand fitting and stuff that goes on with those?
Oh, sure. I mean, you know, our revolvers, we do a 357 and a 38 J-frame. I'll get a little bit about those. We do those in runs of a few hundred, so that's what we can produce the most of, because there's not as a ton of hand fitting in comparison to the 1911, but it's going to get a lot more hand fitting than your standard run of the mill, you know, mass produced firearms, because you figure from start to finish, you're really only getting a handful of guys getting their hands on it, and the last. You know, point of that is the quality, you know, check, quality assurance, quality control, whatever you want to call it. I mean, it's the owner of the company, you know, it's me and the owner of the company. So we're making sure that everything's, you know, is perfect. We try to make sure that you get the best possible shooting experience out of anything that we make. You know, we got the 357 and the 38, they're both J-frames. We'll get a little history about those too. So our 357 is called the AH-357. That stands for Andrew Hunter. Andrew Hunter was the prosecuting attorney for the John Brown trial.
Oh,
okay. Another cool thing is the owner of the company, Nick Petty, he actually bought Hunter's Hill, which was Andrew Hunter's home, which is located right here in Charlestown.
Nice.
So he's invested.
Right. Wow. That's definitely interesting. Now, where I've got a little bit of confusion. Is everything made in-house? I mean, you're starting with your frames and all of that. Do y'all mill all that, or is that something that you bring
sure,
in
there's,
and
there's
then add to it?
There's a good mix. There's a good mix. You know, any of the gun makers, manufacturers, whether you're huge or you're small, you generally don't see 100% of stuff made in-house. It just doesn't happen.
Yeah.
So, like, for our grips, for example, you know, we have them. Now, they are our own proprietary grips. But we have them outsourced to, you know, a big plastics company that does them, you know, much better than we can for a lot less money, which, you know, we pass on to the savings to the end consumer. We also pass the savings on to, you know, the direct dealers who are dealing with these so that we can keep their margins, you know, and make sure that everybody's happy. The end consumer gets a great price and, you know, the guy that's selling the gun to the end consumer, you know, the retail store or whatnot, they can make some money to keep the lights on. So, no, not everything's done in-house. I'd say a lot of it is. But one thing we stress is it is 100% American-made.
Very nice.
We don't import-export right now. We might get into some of the exporting later or something, but we don't use any Asian, Malaysian, Chinese parts or anything like that. Even in our retail store, you'll be hard-pressed to find something that's not made in the United States. But coming up here in the next couple of weeks, I'll give them a little plug, I guess. Well, you know what? No, I'm not. This is about us. We're going to get some some more CNCs in here, we'll be able to do even more than what we currently do. So, you know, right now I'm not sure the percentage of what's in-house exactly versus what's out, but it'll probably get closer and closer to the 100% mark once, you know, we keep going.
Right, and it's good to hear. That was going to be my follow-up, was on the Made in the USA thing, because I have a lot of manufacturers on, and inevitably I answer that question. That's usually something that the viewers and or the listeners out there are curious about. Not that it's a deal breaker either way, but they're usually curious about that. And inevitably it seems like I'm always hit with the answer that, well, there's this one tiny part that nobody in the United States makes, and we can't find anybody to make it. And so,
yeah, you know, no,
it's 99.9% U.S., but there's this one pin or this one screw or bushing or something, you know?
Right. Yeah, I mean, I can tell you right now, the way we have it set up, you know, unless there's somebody that's not being entirely honest with us along the way, then, you know, that'd be the only way that would ever, ever happen, because we are very, very much interested in keeping, you know, the American economy, you know, going and keeping, you know, the American people happy with a quality American product. It's something extremely, extremely important to us, whether we do it here or, you know, the plastics company, I believe up in New York or whatever it may be, we want to keep it American. It's important to us, and I know it's important to a lot of the people who, you know, are going to own guns.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Now, since we were on the revolvers, let's kind of start out with those in regards to the product line a little bit. You said you do the 38 and the 357s in a J frame. I know that the one y'all had at the show was very, very nice, you know, that two-tone style finish, and then got here on the website and got to looking. I'm a sucker for the bronze. And,
yeah.
And got to looking at that bronze, and I think I cheated on my wife a little bit with that picture. It's definitely beautiful. But as far as specification wise, between the 38 and the 357, what are the differences in between those?
So of course there's going to be some minor differences that I'll probably bore you with, but let's get to the major ones. I mean, there's only a few real differences. They're both J frames, you know. They're both J-frame revolvers. The frames are almost identical, you know. The barrel obviously is different. Chamber, you know, the cylinder's obviously different. But the only real things that you're going to see difference-wise, now they come in three colors, the bronze, burnt bronze, the Jesse James blue, and the midnight blue, which realistically is black. We do some different colors for people if they have a special request or something like that for a small little charge or something. But the biggest differences are the 357 that's going to have a fully exposed hammer spur. Okay, so that's your standard hammer spur. You put it into single action, and the other big difference is you're going to have porting. We actually have true porting, three hole porting on both sides, right there at the end of the barrel, right before the muzzle. So you're going to have that. You know, that's going to give you a lot better experience with that true porting. And then the 38 doesn't have the porting because we kind of made that more for concealment. Now, again, we didn't do any weight savings or anything like that because we still want the shooting experience to be great. And, you know, so that one has a non-exposed, you know, internal hammer spur. So you don't have any exposure of that hammer spur. There's no snags or anything like that. So realistically, that's the biggest difference.
Gotcha. Now, are you plus P rated on the 38?
We're plus P rated on both.
Oh, okay. Very nice. And as far as the finish, how's the finish done on those?
That finish on the current model is Cerakote.
All right. Very cool.
Yeah, and then, of course, that two-tone you see, that real shiny, a lot of people say chrome. It's not chrome. It's just a lot of attention to detail on a high, it's high polish.
High polish, right. That's what I was reading on the side. It looks chrome.
It does. There's a lot of attention that goes into them.
right. Definitely beautiful. Now, with the 1911s, I know that, you know, a lot of people are interested in that. There's a lot of custom shops out there. Tell us a little bit about those 1911s and some of the detail that goes into those.
So our 1911s are in my opinion, the most exciting part of what we do. I mean, you know, of course we take pride in everything that we do, but me personally, I love the 1911. You know, when I shot one for the first time, I was personally, you know, of course, my view on it's going to be obviously good because I work here. You know, that's what people are going to think. But I'm telling you, I mean, they just, they're so smooth and so nice. They have a nice weight and balance. So essentially, we don't use any plastic components in our 1911s. I mean, they are fully loaded for the shooting experience. You know, even, you know, the housing in the back, mainspring, all that stuff is all steel, the guide rod, the whole nine yards. I mean, really don't spare any expense when, you know, we build these. And we, you know, we've tested them up against some of those, you know, some of those 1911s that charge double and triple what we do. And, you know, honestly, I'll take one every day, especially backed by our lifetime warranty on all our pistols.
Very awesome. Now, in the 1911, I'm guessing, I did not look on the website, but I'm guessing varying sizes on those.
Yeah. You got, you know, your standard 3.45, you know, and just like everybody does. Now, our size is different. Everybody's different a little bit. Some people go 3.5. We do 3.5, 4.25. Some people do, you know, slightly different variations of that, but that's kind of where we found that perfect balance to be.
Right. And are there any options for the – are there any of the color options available on the 1911?
So right now they're all your black nitride. This year we're going to – and, of course, any custom requests, we can handle that with a little extra couple week lead time or something like that.
Sure.
But this year we're going to go into some different coatings. We're going to have different sight options, you know, high-vis, the whole nine. They're genuine Novec cut. You know, so we use genuine Novec sights. Novec's, of course, a West Virginia company, too, so that was an easy decision.
Neato.
And so we'll have different style sights and some different coatings. We're actually, I don't want to promise anything, but we're looking at possible bob cut options. We're definitely going to add that 25 LPI checkering on the front strap there. Probably going to remove some of the bigger bold text that we have running along the slide. Keep a simple logo in the back. So this year's model is going to be a little bit different. We're going to use all the same components, make sure it's, you know, just as good, if not better, than what we're currently making. And then we're probably going to venture into the 9mm world. 10mm thing probably sideline for a little while because that's a whole another ball game there. But yeah, I mean, it's fun, and we look to do a lot with it.
All right. Awesome. Now, I guess the elephant in the room here is the AR platform, and I know you got a lot of different variants, it looks like, or several different ones to kind of talk about. It looks like you guys can pretty much do anything across the board anybody wants, almost. So,
let's
jump into those a little bit.
Yeah, we have a couple different what we call, you know, our standard models. I mean, locally, we can do whatever the customer wants. It's generally always one-off, whatever they like. But as far as direct distributor and stuff like that, currently, there's pretty much three models. You know, your baseline model, you know, comparable to, you know, your M&P 15 Sport or something like that. Those generally MSRP, you know, anywhere from about high 6 to low 7. Then we have our production model that's all built on billet receivers and has the nice long quad rails and, you know, your upgraded barrel and upgraded parts kits, which we do in-house, by the way, the enhanced lower parts kit, 100% American made right here. You know, we take a lot of pride in that. And, you know, so that one runs just north of 1,000. And then we have our Requiem series, which is not what I'm most proud of. Nick and I got together and developed that. You know, being a vet, it was important to me, you know, that I saw that Nick, you know, the owner of the company was, I mean, extremely veteran friendly. And obviously, hiring some of the other vets here, quite a few of them. You know, we dedicated our Requiem series to veterans. We make donations for every rifle that we sell, no matter what level we sell it at. To the disabled American veterans and some of the other better non-for-profit companies that are, you know, helping vets.
Yeah, I was seeing on the website there on the page with the Requiem, I was seeing the you know, where a portion of the proceeds do go to those veterans organizations, and that prompts me to ask you, have you heard of Antares Alliance at all?
I can't say that I have.
Okay, that may be something to kind of look into. they hold an event, SHOT Show Week. It's called Alliance Week. And what Antares Alliance is, we can talk a little more, obviously, once we get done with this. But I always like to give those guys a plug because they're doing great stuff. And what they do is they take veteran-owned companies or veteran-owned organizations and then also organizations that may donate a sizable or specific, I guess is a better word, amount of money to veteran and first responder causes. And they network with those guys. So before SHOT Show, the Sunday before SHOT Show, I actually had the privilege of attending what they called their Antares Alliance, or maybe Alliance Week, I can't remember now, but they called it a try-and-buy event, where a lot of these different companies would come out. And it's sort of like Industry Day at the Range with SHOT Show, but it's just for those that are a part of that Antares Alliance. So... maybe something with Harpers Ferry being a veteran-owned organization and also kicking back and donating to the cause, that might be something to look into as far as networking opportunities and stuff. That would be interesting to see as well.
Sure, yeah. Definitely send me some information when we get off here. I'll pass it on to Nick and see where that goes. I don't see how it can hurt.
Right. Now, with the ARs, are we just 5.56 caliber at this point?
Of course, we do 5.56, 223. We do 300 blackout as well.
Okay.
And as far as national sales, we haven't really ventured out past that yet. We do some one-off builds for some local customers and some other various calibers and stuff like that. But as far as national sales, right now, your 5.56, 223 and your 300 blackout in carbine length and left hand and pistol as well.
Oh, okay. So y'all do some pistol stuff.
Yeah.
Very cool. There was a question that popped into my brain there for just a minute, and I don't know. I'm going to blame it on the SHOT Show plague.
That I
lost it. But it was about the AR-15s. I don't want to move on from those until I ask that question. But I think I'm going to have to. You had talked. You talked previously about possibly expanding into the 9mm in the 1911. As far as things you would like to move into eventually, maybe other platforms or other designs. Is there anything that has piqued your interest? And I'm not saying that it's necessarily on the horizon, but that y'all have thought about.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we out at SHOT Show, we made some great connections, and one of the connections we made out there. Is going to provide us with some equipment that this year we're going to be ready to do some AR-10 platforms and 308. We'll be able to do some AR-9s, of course, 9mm on that AR platform, and we'll be able to start messing around, kind of figuring out how to do, that Glock style poly frame type pistol, kind of made with our and twist on it and things like that. And then some difference, that machine will also help us do some different things with 1911. So nationally, I'm not sure if we'll be hitting it this year, but I know at least locally and, direct dealers might see some of that kind of stuff. But hopefully sometime this year or later next year, we'll have that effect.
Right. I gotcha. Now, for those out there that may be, maybe looking at the revolvers or looking at the 1911s or the AR platform rifles and or pistols that you have, the question you probably get this in some fashion or another. So I'm gonna give you the opportunity to answer it here for everybody listening. But why your particular models? What makes yours stand apart from everything else that might be on the market?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, for the end consumer, the answer is pretty simple. I mean, we don't have a giant assembly line here. We don't have, belts running our guns through. We're not making a gajillion of them a day. We're taking our time. I mean, we're a small manufacturer. We have quality in mind. This is a US-made, 100% US-made product with a lifetime warranty that you can count on us making things right. I mean, we haven't had any serious issues, little things here and there, and we've made them right. We've you can call, you know, whether you want to call and inquire about something or you want to call and complain about something, you're probably going to call and you're probably going to get me to answer the phone. You know, it'll be me, it'll be my wife, it'll be Nick, the owner. I mean, we're small. Quality is key for us. And, you know, there's nothing like having just a handful of people touching, you know, your firearm and making sure that it's the best possible firearm that we can offer for you. The other thing is, I mean, we're competitive. Our pricing is competitive. Realistically, for, you know, if you look at our revolver, I mean, it's beautiful. Something that, and you know, that nice and that high five, low six range, I mean, that's competitively priced. And our 1911, I mean, you can compare it with these huge, you know, companies or some of these other custom shop companies. You know, you could easily hit $3,500 to $5,000 with some of these companies. You know, but it's $1,695 for a gun, you know, a 1911 of that quality with a lifetime warranty. You'd probably be hard pressed to find something. And if you do, you tell me, because I'll make sure that we make the adjustments. Hard pressed to find something better.
Yeah, that's what I noticed. I wanted you to answer that, obviously, but that was going to be my follow-up on that, is that it looks like, you know, from what I'm looking, with the price point, everything else considered, that you're getting, you know, you're getting that custom shop experience at basically an entry-level price.
Right.
Particularly with those revolvers. I mean, that's a standard, you know, run-of-the-mill issue, run-of-the-mill model Smith & Wesson revolver, basically. And you're getting that that custom shop aspect of it for the same price, which I think is really amazing.
Yeah, and the warranty, too. Trust me, you have a warranty issue, we're going to make it right or you're going to get a brand new gun. Luckily, we haven't had that, but if it comes down to it, that's a simple fix.
Right. Now, with distribution and that sort of thing, is everything done, facilitated primarily in-store locally and through the website, or have you looked into dealer options, distribution options, and things like that?
Well, so something that's super important to us, the end consumer probably won't care about this, but for any of the dealers out there listening, you know, we have a retail shop. We feel your pain on, you know, having to be competitive. And so, no, we're not through distribution, and we don't have any immediate plans to go through distribution, because that's just one more person that has to get paid. So I guess it ultimately would affect the end consumer. So we want to make sure you get a good margin. So we take care of it through the website, call right through the store, and it goes to a direct dealer network, or, you know, just get them transferred right into your local shop. You know, any shop that's interested in being a direct dealer, we welcome them. We're a little, this sounds crazy, but we're a little picky on the shops we deal with. You know, we want to make sure that they're reputable, and I'll look into them before we send them out. You know, if somebody's got, you know, 2.9 stars or 1.9 stars on Google reviews, I'm not sure if that's somebody we want representing our brand, you know. Right. So distribution maybe one day, but right now we're about the end consumer, and we're about protecting the margins and you know, the brand. Or, you know, our direct dealers.
Sure, and I think that's a great answer. Something that pops into my mind, you know, when we talk about that, is, you know, you're looking at obviously having to scale up, and then when you scale up, you know, is it a situation to where quality has to suffer because you scale up? Because you certainly don't want that to be the case as well.
Yeah, absolutely not. No, quality's never going to suffer. If it means I got to stay here till 10 o'clock at night, or if it means that my guys have to work overtime, or I have to hire new guys, that's not going to happen. There's not a chance. Right. I got too much riding on this.
Right. Now, you mentioned that you guys are in West Virginia. Shift gears just a little bit. Not necessarily talking politics, but out of curiosity, because I'm down here in Texas. What is the, you know, legislative, firearm legislative situation and everything like in West Virginia? Is it pretty friendly?
It's extremely friendly. And to be honest, the easiest way to answer that, the way you'll understand it and the way most people will understand it, we are a smaller Texas with mountains and cold weather. That's the easiest way to put it. Yeah, we're pretty in line with you guys.
I don't know that I would hold Texas up as the bastion of firearm freedom necessarily. There are definitely a few states doing better.
I think I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, a lot of people do. A lot of people do when they think of it, they think of Texas. But, you know, we were having a conversation not too long ago about, and I can't remember the legislation that passed in Washington recently. It's like 1269 or I don't even remember what it was, but there was some legislation to where it's basically gonna categorize even 22s under assault weapons and add some fees and trainings and other stuff. And even with all that going on in Washington, they have constitutional carry, which is something Texas does not have.
Okay, then we win. We have constitutional carry.
There you go. So West Virginia apparently trumps Texas. So we are moving that direction here. I see it. I'm pretty active with some of the state level, you know, pro second organizations and stuff like that. And I think we're moving to that direction here slowly but surely. And I think slowly but surely is the way to go. A lot of folks out there want that Hail Mary pass and just all firearm regulations to be repealed across the country overnight. And you know, that's a pipe dream. Unfortunately, it took years to get to the situation we're at, and unfortunately it's going to take years to unroll them. But it's good to know that y'all are in a friendly environment there.
Yeah, West Virginia, I mean, it varies by county a lot. I mean, across the board, I'd say one of the most gun-friendly states out there. There's no doubt about it in my mind. I mean, I look at the reciprocity laws. I think we have 38 states or something like that. One state closest to us, to where we are, because we're in the Eastern Panhandle, of course, that comes to mind that doesn't have that freedom, and you can get there in 10 minutes, is Maryland. You know, Maryland is...
Oh, yeah.
They're not huge on your firearms freedom, so we see a lot of the people coming over here to, you know, not necessarily buy, but sometimes you buy their magazines because it's legal. You know, it's completely legal to buy out of state, possess it in that state, or just come over here and talk. And be with like-minded people, you know. We see that a lot. You know, West Virginia, it's a little odd because we do have a lot of those freedoms. And whereas we, I'm not trying to get too political, we generally as a state vote red in the presidential elections. You know, we have a lot of, we got the senator and governor, I think, that was blue. The governor switched to the red side last year. It's a little wacky, but, you know, so you have a good mix. But I'd say no matter what, I mean, shoot, our local sheriff's a Democrat, but he signs off on any qualifying concealed carry permit that comes to his desk. And, you know, he's a great guy. So I think collectively here in West Virginia, no matter what side you're on, for the most part, everybody agrees that firearms freedom is important and we're not going to, you know, infringe on those rights.
Right. And I think that's I think that's an important thing to note, is that, you know, sounds like from what you're saying there, talking about West Virginia, we get caught up sometimes in the red, blue, you know, liberal, conservative, Democrat, Republican arguments sometimes, that we fail to realize that, you know, the Second Amendment is not about either one of those. You can fall anywhere on either, you know, of those three spectrums and still be pro Second Amendment.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, me personally, you know, I don't want to get too into it, but I have views on both sides, you know.
Sure.
I lean one way, but, you know, I have views on both sides because, you know, everybody has an opinion, everybody has beliefs, and whereas I don't want people, you know, infringing on my constitutional gun rights, I wouldn't want to ever infringe on anybody else's rights to other things.
Right. Yeah, exactly. I guess it could tie into the golden rule a little bit, but, you know, I think for the most part, everybody wants to just be left alone, right?
Ask me. Leave me alone. Let me pay my taxes and raise my kids and,
sure,
you know, go.
I don't really care. As long as you're not harming me and hurting me, you're harming my family and hurting my family, just leave me alone. I'll leave you alone, and everybody can be happy. That's the utopia.
I'm with you 100%.
So let's shift gears here just a second. I want to put you on the spot with a couple of questions here. With the business and going through the design and everything required for the products that you have out there, maybe even dealing with certain legislation or facilitation issues as far as dealing with orders coming in from across the country, that sort of thing. Is there any anything that sticks out in your mind that has been a hurdle that you've sort of had to overcome?
You know, nothing major and nothing that specifically sticks out. I will say that, and I'm sure anybody that listens will understand what I'm saying here, whether it's at a manufacturing standpoint, the distribution standpoint, direct dealer, end consumer, gun shop, whatever, this year's been different. This year's been, 2018 was very different. And I know you know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
It was a little bit of a struggle. I'm not going to lie, nothing major, but it took some creativity, and there were some hurdles that we had to, jump in. There's a lot of things that changed, and this is just my opinion, but I think it's because nobody's scared about their gun rights in 2018,
Right.
Things are different than they have been, the previous maybe 8 to 10 years, and people were comfortable. The people who buy guns, those people are comfortable.
Right. Yeah, a lot of there, and I think we've seen that across the entire community, industry,
sure.
Culture, that there's a lot of complacency, and we've got to be really careful with that. I think that from what you had mentioned earlier about SHOT Show this year and some other stuff, I think that we're looking at a little better year as far as maybe that lack of complacency. I think we're looking at a little better year. As far as the industry and stuff like that in 2019, that seems to be what I see from your standpoint. Do you feel the same way?
I'm optimistic. I don't have a crystal ball or a brass ball, as we've called it.
Well, we all know it only takes one incident that gets news traction or something like that.
And of course, I would never want to see anything like that.
Absolutely.
I have 3 young kids in school, and the thought of that just makes me sick to my stomach. Of course, that does change the climate a little bit in the gun world. But I'm hoping that it naturally just changes back into what it's normally been. And to be honest with you, part of that natural change is probably going to be presidential race this year. I mean, I see that changing things.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, it almost always does. Now, moving along on a little bit of a more positive note rather than the negative there, as far as over the years with the company, like I said, the products and the things you guys are doing, does anything in particular stand out as a success, something that you're really proud that you was able to get accomplished and get under your belt?
Oh, goodness. so much to talk about there. I mean, on a personal level, I'm proud of where the company, stands, whether it was ups and downs. I mean, we've had peaks and valleys just like any company would, but, no matter what, we've stood strong in all of that. We didn't get too big for our britches, while things were going good. We didn't get too down on ourselves while the industry wasn't doing as hot. I'd say the thing I'm most proud of is just the way that from ownership to investor to management, to low-level employee, everybody just hung in there and still, no matter what, took care of that customer and just made it happen.
Right. Yeah. And sounds like what you're saying there is consistency was a big key.
There you go. There's the word.
Yeah, I call it head down and hustle. Just regardless of what's going on, keep forging forward and doing your own thing.
Yep, and that's easy here because it's a big family. It really is. I mean, most of the guys here live local. I have one guy that lives about 30 minutes from here in Front Royal, Virginia. He's one of our gunsmiths, and it's a big family here. Everybody's generally local and knows everybody. I'm sure somebody's married to somebody's cousin or something. It's a big family.
Right, so looks like we're up against our time here, Mike. If you would, let everybody know how they can follow you, find you, get more information on what Harper's Ferry has to offer.
Sure. If you have any questions or any you want to reach out to us, whether you're an end consumer or want to be a direct dealer, we'd love to have you on board with us. You can go to www.harpersferryarmory.com. You can find us on Facebook at Harper's Ferry, or you can feel free to give us a call, and I'll most likely answer the phone, 304-535-3110.
And I will encourage everybody to get over there and check that stuff out, especially if you're a wheel gun guy like me. Those revolvers are pretty doggone sexy. So, Mike, thanks for joining us. Appreciate it. And hopefully we can have you back soon and talk again.
Thank you, Chris. Appreciate it.
Thank you for joining in on another Firearm Friday. Don't forget to log on to clovertech.com. There you'll find our social media links, the blog, cool swag, and more. If you'd like to help support our projects and take advantage of some extra perks, you can do so over on Patreon at patreon.com/clovertech. Have a great weekend.